This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Casey Golden, Policy Director, and Joelle Robinson, Field Director for Climate Solutions, a nonprofit that works to accelerate practical and profitable solutions to global warming. Joelle and Casey are here today to discuss the environmental implications of shipping coal to China through Northwest ports, and to tell us about the Power Past Coal campaign. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks. Always great to be with you, Diane. We love your show.
It's good to have you here. Thank you so much. Would you begin by reviewing the contribution to global warming of burning coal for energy?
Coal and oil are the two biggest contributors to global warming. And coal is by far the most carbon-intensive fuel, and carbon is the pollution that causes global warming. So if you're interested in solutions to global warming, we can all be part of the solution in small ways. And together, we have to reduce our coal consumption in big ways. That's really the key.
Would you also remind us of the progress being made toward reducing coal use in the U.S.?
Thanks for asking, because particularly here in the Northwest, last year we got unanimous agreements in Oregon and Washington to phase out our last two coal-burning power plants. Seattle, of course, has been coal-free for, probably a decade now. And we are building cleaner energy systems to power our energy needs. We're getting cheaper energy because we're using less of it because we're investing so much in energy efficiency. And we're leaving coal in the past in the Northwest. We're ahead of the rest of the country, but the rest of the country is moving forward too. New coal plants have been canceled. There won't be any new ones built. Older coal plants are beginning to be phased out. And we're on our way to a cleaner, more sustainable energy future in the Northwest.
So we've made progress at home, but now we have the issue of exporting U.S. coal to Asia. And the development of terminals for this purpose is being considered at several Washington and Oregon ports. What are the forces encouraging export of coal to Asia? Why is this happening?
It's happening in part because of what we just talked about, right? The coal companies know that we're not interested in their product anymore. The fast-growing Asian economies are where the world markets are growing the most. And frankly, we see this as sort of a desperate effort on the part of the coal industry to get all that coal that's locked up in the mountains of Wyoming and Montana to a very far away market because the local market is drying up because we're figuring out better ways to meet our energy needs. That's the basic economics of it. And the reason that that is such a tremendously bad idea from the perspective of anybody who plans on inhabiting this planet in the future is that in global warming terms, really the X factor, the big ticket item, is what kind of energy infrastructure gets built for the 2 billion people in the fast-growing countries in Asia to power their future. Now, we in the Northwest are demonstrating that there's a better way to go, a cleaner way to go, a more sustainable way to go than coal. But it's not going to help us very much if we just take all the coal that we don't burn and 30 times more, and that's what the proposal is, and ship it off to Asia and have them build a coal-fired economy. We're all in this together. We think that those fast-growing Asian economies deserve economic success too, and that we're all going to have to follow a clean energy, sustainable pathway to economic prosperity. That's the only pathway that works. That's the only pathway that guarantees any kind of a livable future for our kids. And that's what's at stake here in this coal export campaign.
Would you now tell us about the Power Past Coal campaign? What is your goal?
Our goal is to stop all coal export off the U.S. West Coast. And we have over 80 coalition members and thousands and thousands and thousands of people that are engaging and speaking up. 40,000 people, primarily in the Northwest and throughout the region, have signed a petition and engaged in other ways to tell our leaders that we do not want coal exported through our communities, through our towns and our homes en route to be burned in Asia.
Would you say more about the specific groups that are involved in the campaign?
We have many different constituencies. We have a very strong health constituency. There's over 252 doctors that have signed a letter articulating the many adverse and very dangerous health impacts of coal dust and diesel emissions on this scale. We have tremendous outpouring of faith leaders that are speaking out, from reverends to bishops to priests and pastors. We have business CEOs and folks from all different kinds of businesses all around the region that are also engaging in our panels and writing opinion pieces and calling members of Congress, calling Governor Gregoire, calling State Lands Commissioner Peter Goldmark. We have commercial fishermen engaged, lots of students and youth, farmers. We have many elected officials. We have over 42 that have spoken out about their alarm and concern over these proposals, including Seattle Mayor Mike McGinn and City Council Member Strom Peterson from City of Edmonds, King County Executive Dow Constantine, and many, many others throughout the region.
Could I add to that a little
bit?
Sure. You know, we do this for a living, and Joelle's the best organizer in the Western Hemisphere, so we're constantly contacting people. But the thing that's been so inspiring to us as people who work on organizing these campaigns is how people are self-organizing in all these communities. Every day we learn about some other organization. Joelle mentioned the doctors. They, by themselves, formed Whatcom Docs, which now includes more than half the physicians in Whatcom County, organized to oppose this. You know, these coal trains would be coming through communities all across the Northwest. It's not just the port communities. It's Seattle and Tacoma and Edmonds and Vancouver. These trains would be coming through all day long. And people in those communities are rising up and organizing themselves and calling us and trying to figure out what to do about it, not just because of the global warming impacts, not just because of the coal dust, but because they see coal as fundamentally opposed to the kind of vision and identity that we have here in the Northwest. We're about innovation. We're about quality of life. We're about clean energy. And in these communities, coal trains rumbling by all day is just the exact opposite of what kind of future we're building. And so we're hard at work organizing folks, but this region is hard at work organizing itself to stop this.
Which Northwest ports are currently being considered for development of terminals to ship coal? Maybe you could just list the ones that are in play.
Yeah, it's important to note that when you say ports, we generally think of, well, any place along the coast. Ports are public entities, like the Port of Seattle has port commissioners and the Port of Tacoma. None of those ports want anything to do with this. Seattle, Tacoma, Portland rejected this out of hand as a bad economic idea, a bad environmental idea, and they wouldn't touch it. So now the coal industry has to kind of scrape the bottom of the barrel and see what they can come up with. For the most part, they're looking at new private facilities where there aren't any elected officials that they have to deal with and where it's hard, frankly, to hold decision makers accountable. So one of them is up in Cherry Point. It's called the Gateway Pacific Terminal. It's a private site that they're trying to develop. The other big one is in Longview, also at a private site, a former aluminum smelter. And the nearby public ports didn't want any part of this. So we're encouraged, frankly, that publicly accountable and publicly elected decision makers didn't want any part of coal export because they see a fundamentally different kind of vision. But we're also going to have to hold decision makers accountable for financing these, permitting these, all the public decisions that are going to need to be made to make this kind of thing possible. We're now going to have to apply to private developments where there aren't elected officials who are actually proposing this, but they will be making important decisions that we need to hold them accountable for.
What other locations are under consideration?
Grace Harbor has a smaller but still important proposal, and that's it for Washington State. There are several others in Oregon as well, in Coos Bay. There's one in St. Helens, which is right across the river from Longview on the Columbia River, and that's connected through a transshipment proposal to the Port of Morrow over on the east side of the Columbia Gorge on the Columbia River. So we do have several proposals popping up. I will say, you know, at first we were concerned, oh, they're going to pop up everywhere. They're not going to pop up everywhere, in part because the public ports won't touch it, in part because you need a lot of deep water port access. You need a lot of rail capacity. There's relatively few places where this is even conceivable. We don't think there's any place where it makes any sense, but there's very few places you could even try it. So that's where they're trying it.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Casey Golden, Policy Director, and Joelle Robinson, Field Director for Climate Solutions. Our topic is the environmental implications of shipping coal to China through Northwest ports and the Power Pass Coal Campaign. How much coal is likely to be shipped if the proposed terminals go forward? There is coal now being shipped, and so what kind of increase are we looking at?
Yeah, there's very little being shipped now. Oh. There is a little bit. It's most of it out of British Columbia, none out of ports in Washington or Oregon. So coal has been a regional market, not a global market like oil, because what we're talking about here is very heavy rocks. And it's very awkward and inefficient and expensive to get those heavy rocks all the way from the mountains of Montana to Asia. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. So to give you a sense of the scale, I talked earlier about the coal plants that we agreed to shut down, unanimous agreement among the communities and workers at the plant and companies and environmentalists. Those two big coal plants in Washington and Oregon burn about 8 million tons of coal a year. That is a lot of coal. What they're proposing to ship exceeds potentially 150 million tons, potentially 20 times as much as we burn now through these ports. So it's an order of magnitude increase. To give you another sense of the scale, people are probably familiar with the big national fight over the Keystone Pipeline. This coal, when burned, will produce substantially more CO2 than all of that oil, that tar sands oil that would move through the Keystone Pipeline. So even on a global scale, this is a really big deal in terms of how much coal moves, how much carbon gets burned, and how much the climate warms.
I was just going to comment on the heavy rocks. These trains are the heaviest trains on the planet, and they take four diesel locomotives to move them. And they are about 125 cars each, about 1.5 miles long. So they are very, very big trains.
And we're talking about along the coast on the way up to Bellingham, we're talking about 20 of those trains a day, 20-mile-and-a-half long trains. In Spokane, because they handle all the coal that comes out of Wyoming, has to go through Spokane before it gets to any of these ports, they could see 40, 50, 60, 80 of these mile-and-a-half long trains every day.
Would you like to expand on how this will affect the communities that have these trains going through?
Well, I have been to many of these coal hard truth forums that we've had. We've had 18 around the region where we've had a healthcare professional, usually a person from the faith community, from the elected official community, often from the business community. And I've heard over and over the healthcare professionals articulate how concerned they are about emergency response vehicles and actually have personal stories about people that they knew that would not be alive today, in their opinion, if they had been stuck behind one of these coal trains. And so, you know, I think about fire trucks and police cars and ambulances. And I think about my seven nieces and nephews and my sisters trying to get to daycare to pick them up and all the people that need to get to work and how these rail lines slice many of these communities and how that completely would exacerbate difficulty for all of these emergency response vehicles and for people's quality of life.
You know, the other thing we see in these communities is a real crossroads about what kind of future they want to build. I mean, they're obviously concerned about the coal dust. They're concerned about the emergency vehicles and the direct impacts. But they look at pictures of these coal trains and coal piles, and they think of their community as the host for that. And it's just directly at odds with their sense of what kind of future they want, what kind of future they're already building in their communities. And it's not just in Bellingham. In Bellingham, in Longview, in Grays Harbor, there's people working now on developing clean, thriving local economies, economies that are looking forward to the future. You can't be that kind of place if your community's covered with coal dust and it's got big, noisy, dusty trains going through it every day. That means you're choosing not to be the kind of sustainable, local, clean, thriving, healthy community that most people want to live in. It's like deciding to be 19th century England instead of 21st century Pacific Northwest. And they really see this choice about the coal trains as a crossroads about which future they're going to get to have.
Would you like to expand on the health effects of transporting coal?
Some of the health dangers include the coal dust itself. It includes toxic heavy metals like mercury and exacerbates and increases rates of asthma. And then the exorbitant increase in diesel emissions from trains and from the cargo ships that would be taking this all the way to Asia. That would cause heart disease, lung disease, and cancer. Also, the noise exposure can cause learning impairments in children. So those are just a few of the short-term immediate effects. And then certainly Asia burning coal, the toxic air pollution crosses the Pacific, poisoning our water and our fish and our food supply. And then certainly we all would suffer the many adverse health impacts that are very well documented on increased global warming.
Well, you alluded a bit to this earlier, but would you say more about the approval process that's required for these various ports and the places where there might be an opportunity for public input and influence?
They'll need a lot of different permits. It will take a long time for them to get those permits. And the permit process in the Bellingham proposal is beginning now with what's called the scoping process for their environmental impact statement. And what that means is they're deciding, what will we look at? What will we consider? How broadly will we look at the effects of these proposals? And to our mind, that's a way of saying, well, what are you going to ignore? What are you going to close your eyes to? Why would you not look at everything? So citizens get to be involved in that decision about what they look at. It's called the scoping process. And if you go to the powerpastcoal.org website, you can get involved in the scoping process. Scoping process sounds kind of processy and bureaucratic, but I want to assure folks, this is the first opportunity where people really get to weigh in and say, consider all the facts. What are you hiding? So that begins now. Each site is a little bit different in terms of the decision-making. Joelle mentioned earlier in Washington State, Commissioner of Public Lands Peter Goldmark has an important role to play later in the process after the EIS because the Department of Natural Resources, which he's elected to lead, issues leases for the use of public aquatic lands. And when he issues those leases, he has to decide whether the proposed use is in the public interest. So he gets to look at all the factors, the rail congestion, how it affects directly the aquatic lands, and whether it's a good thing for our communities and our states. And that's why at the Power Pass Coal website, you'll also see an opportunity to comment directly to Commissioner of Public Lands, Peter Goldmark, who ultimately will have an important decision-making role. But Joelle, you might want to talk a little bit about what's at the site and how people can use the site to get engaged and stay engaged.
Yes, like Casey said, it's a great place to sign the petition, and that will be registered with Commissioner Goldmark and with Governor Gregoire. And then we also are communicating those numbers of people. As I mentioned earlier, 40,000 people have signed that petition already. We're making sure that our U.S. Senators, Senator Murray and Senator Cantwell, as well as all the members of Congress, are well aware that their constituents are opposed. We're making sure that the state legislators also know. On the website, there are many other places that you can find out how to engage more specifically, depending on where you live, which county or which state. There's also a tab that says Voices of Opposition, and it helps articulate all the many faith groups and businesses and health groups and conservation groups and the different constituencies that are speaking out. There's also a gentleman who's been a longtime Boeing employee who lives up in Skagit County who is a tremendous photographer, and there's photos of what Casey was talking about to help understand the enormity. The Longview Daily News called it a colossal pile of coal that would be in Longview, for example. So it helps people understand what would be coming through if we allow this to happen. But we, the people, are going to stop these proposals. And that's how, by signing the petition, you can stay engaged by receiving emails from the Power Pass Coal campaign. And that will help explain what's happening with these different proposals and how people can make their voices heard engaging in all these different processes at the right time.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Casey Golden, Policy Director, and Joelle Robinson, Field Director for Climate Solutions. Our topic is the environmental implications of shipping coal to China through Northwest ports and the Power Pass Coal campaign. Would you say more about how far along the process is in the different ports? You mentioned the port north of Bellingham, but how about the other ones? How far along are they?
Well, the good news is that they've already suffered a couple of setbacks because it was disclosed through their internal emails that in Longview, for instance, that they were actually planning on building a facility that was about 10 times as big as what they had actually proposed in their permit application. That set them back quite a little ways. So they had to press restart in Longview. They just submitted a new proposal for 44 million tons of coal out of Longview, and that permit process is just beginning. The permit process in Bellingham is beginning now. We expect the Longview one to be a little ways behind. Joelle, do we know about the Grace Harbor timeline at all?
Not exactly. They are moving forward. It's not as far along as the other two But we are very concerned, and so that's yet another area where we need to have solidarity around the state and around the regions saying we don't want coal export out of Grays Harbor or Longview or Bellingham, nowhere.
And I'm not sure if you have listeners or if your listeners have friends in Oregon, but there is a very timely and important opportunity in Oregon that's mostly going to be directed at weighing in with the governor and the Department of State Lands on this facility in the Port of Mora, which looked like it tried to kind of sneak under public view for a while. We think we've got it out in public view now, but the PowerPass Coal website will also direct you to how to weigh in if you're in Oregon.
How do public officials in general seem to be responding to this issue?
At the highest level, it's not entirely clear to some of our public officials what their decision-making role is. And when they don't have a direct decision-making role and it's a controversial issue, their inclination is usually to hang back a little bit. So we're seeing quite a little bit of hanging back. Mostly what we're seeing is local public officials saying, this doesn't work for our community. Some in the terminal communities themselves, but especially all up and down the rail lines, local elected officials saying, having trains moving through our community all day full of coal is just not consistent with the kind of economic strategy we have with public safety and health. So we're seeing a really amazing outpouring of opposition on the part of local elected officials, even in small communities up and down the rail line, and of course in the big cities along the I-5 corridor where most of this coal would have to move through.
Would you comment briefly on the issue of jobs? That's put forward as a potential benefit in many cases.
I'm really glad you asked that because this is a sustainability show. And you talked, I think, when you mentioned the subject of the program, it's about the environmental impacts. It's not just about the environmental impacts. It's about the whole picture. And the jobs part of this is a really important part of the picture. There are people in these communities who need jobs. You know, to be honest, when you talk to them, for the most part, they understand that if they had to pick what kind of jobs they could have, shoveling coal is not among their top priorities, but they need economic opportunity, and that is an important part of this debate. It really is. And we work very closely with labor and business. We are a job-creating organization. We build the clean energy economy. We think this is an issue about trade-offs between jobs, how many and what kind. So look at Bellingham, for instance. They've planned a waterfront redevelopment project that would include hotels and restaurants and businesses along the waterfront, a place that would really showcase the great quality of life in Bellingham. The train tracks go through there, right through there on their way up to the terminal, if it ever got built. So for a few jobs at the port, the former mayor of Bellingham said, why would we throw away potentially 10,000 jobs at this showcase waterfront redevelopment for a couple hundred jobs at the port? You know, when you think about this, it really is about economic justice and what kind of economic future you want. If you brand your community as the place where fossil fuels move through America on their way to Asia, it's very difficult to brand your community as the kind of place that can attract the kind of jobs that most folks want, clean jobs, healthy jobs, the kind of jobs that produce a lot of economic activity and a lot of prosperity. You know, handling bulk cargo, bulk fuels, bulk raw materials to be processed in another economy across the ocean is not a good jobs plan for America. It means that, you know, most of the jobs are going to be produced when you manufacture stuff, when you invest in stuff, not when you just move the coal. And frankly, you know, I think Peabody Coal and Goldman Sachs has a lot of audacity coming into our local communities and saying, you guys are desperate. The only kind of jobs you can have is shoveling coal into the Asian economies, which are really going to reap most of the economic benefits of this kind of transaction. So we think the jobs issue is really important. We think it's a lousy job strategy.
And I would just add that the Mayor Nearing of Marysville spoke very passionately about how if this proposal of the Cherry Point in Bellingham moved forward, how it would kill downtown jobs and how he was very, very concerned. And then he wrote a letter articulating some of those concerns as well.
Assuming that Asia, in particular China, is the key market for exported coal, how robust is the Chinese and or Asian market for coal at present? Because that's going to affect, I would imagine, the success of this project.
Yeah, and the truth is, it's anybody's guess. There's a lot of people who are paid a lot of money to try to figure out the answer to that, and even they don't know. You know, we've seen in global commodity markets for all kinds of commodities, the fast-growing Asian economies are sort of playing chess on the global chessboard. So one day there'll be a huge international market for some of these commodities, the next day it'll collapse. Portland and Los Angeles, cited coal ports in the past, invested a lot of money and a lot of infrastructure, and the coal never moved because the international market dried up. We don't know, really. You know, people are going to bet money. Goldman Sachs has lots of funny money to spend, so they can make wild bets with other people's money. And if the bets don't work out, it's no skin off their back. But for our communities, once you commit our infrastructure to those kind of projects, you're setting back our ability to do other things. You're using scarce public capital on investment that may not work out. But the key thing, I think, in terms of what those international markets are like is people all over Asia and their governments are making big decisions right now, fateful decisions for the whole world about what kind of energy future they're going to have, how they're going to spend their energy dollars, what kind of energy infrastructure they're going to build. And they're looking at all the same choices we are. Are they going to build out more coal? Are they going to build out more energy efficiency? Are they going to pioneer new renewable resources? They're looking at all those things. Now, if we go and say, here, have all the coal that we're not going to burn, take coal from the Powder River Basin in America, what does that say to them? It says, go ahead and build out your coal infrastructure for another 2 billion people. Of course, they deserve economic opportunity every bit as much as we do. The problem with that is if they build out all these coal plants that last for 50 years, then we are all locked in to a global climate crisis that we can't turn around. So none of us can afford that. How do we get out of that? The only fair way to get out of it is for us to pioneer and build the clean energy technologies and businesses and practices that can power a sustainable prosperity for us and our future and for all the people who aspire to prosperity who don't have it yet. Doing that, pioneering that sustainable future, is exactly the opposite of shoveling coal into Asia's coal furnaces. And that's why we feel so strongly that we shouldn't sponsor it here.
How much do you think will be accomplished by preventing export of coal through Northwest ports? How big a difference will it make?
Sightline Institute has done some research, and they say if these proposals went forward, the pollution involved, global warming pollution, would be larger than the Keystone XL pipeline, which is very significant.
You know, it's a great question, Diane, and it's sort of the global warming question in a nutshell. How much can we really do? How much can we really have an impact on a problem this big? Well, on this coal export battle, our communities, our local officials, are going to make one of the most important decisions in the world about whether the world builds out a fossil-fueled global economy that will plunge us into climate crisis for decades and centuries ahead. How much difference can we make? Literally all the difference in the world. You know, these decisions aren't completely under anyone's control, right? So you can always say, well, gosh, maybe if we don't do it, somebody else will do it. Or, you know, maybe some other country will ship them coal. There's lots of coal in the world if we don't. Well, we would never say that about something that we knew to be dangerous, wrong, and toxic. I mean, what if this was nuclear weapons? What if it was dangerous drugs? Would we say, oh, we might as well do it because somebody else is going to do it? No, of course not. Well, coal going into Asia's growing economy is every bit as toxic and dangerous to all of us, much more toxic and dangerous, frankly, than drug trafficking, and every bit as toxic and dangerous as weapons of mass destruction trafficking. I'm not exaggerating that to say that. You know, it really is that important in terms of the prospects for having a healthy future on this planet. We can't control all those decisions. We can control the decisions that are being made in our communities. And that's what we need to do, no matter what anybody else does. We should do the right thing here.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
We, the people, can stop coal export off the U.S. West Coast. We can, we must, and we will. Please get engaged today by going to powerpasscoal.org.
Thanks so much for being here. You have just been listening to Joelle Robinson, Field Director, and Casey Golden, Policy Director for Climate Solutions. For more information, check on the web at powerpasscoal.org and climatesolutions.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.